Walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Tracy Callahan Molnar, handler and chief human of Beacon, the therapy dog who's become increasingly beloved across the USA gymnastics world and, not coincidentally, has also become a full-fledged media sensation. The 2024 United States Olympic gymnastics team trials held June 27th through 30th in Minneapolis were notable chiefly, of course, for solidifying the teams that will represent the U.S. at the Summer Olympics in Paris. But a prominent storyline that emerged at the trials was the presence of a veritable pack of therapy dogs helping calm the nerves of the gymnasts and otherwise comfort them. That canine contingent represents just one initiative amongst USA Gymnastics' assemblage of efforts to improve the emotional environment of a sport that was long ago identified as deeply demanding, which of course is true of many competitive endeavors, and singularly stressful, partly owing to various abuses some coaches visited on these often young athletes. But certain efforts naturally become higher profile than others, like a pod of pooches offering support to nervous gymnasts. And as the New York Times' Julia McCour observed in her coverage of the Minneapolis trials, when it comes to mental health initiatives in gymnastics, Beacon is the star of the show. Indeed, the gymnasts competing in Minneapolis couldn't get enough of Beacon, a four-year-old golden retriever, spending time with him whenever possible and noting he wore a credential around his neck that included the designation Goodest Boy. Some credited Beacon for their triumphs. For instance, after completing the first day of the trials, gymnast Sunny Lee wrote in an Instagram post, "Thank God for Beacon. Day one of trials done, on to day two." Beacon-oriented media coverage of the trials, in addition to the New York Times, included ESPN, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, the TodayShow.com, People Magazine, and NBC News. We'll hear more about Beacon, what it's like to live with a canine celebrity, how he influenced the USA Gymnastics program, the kind of work other therapy dogs do, and more when I speak with Tracy Callahan Molnar in a moment here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Meanwhile, coming up later in today's program, I'll talk with Carrie Head of Pet Pal Animal Shelter, located in St. Petersburg, about the cat yoga class they're offering this coming Tuesday, July 16th at 6 p.m. at the shelter. Sounds like this class will involve free-ranging cats and later opportunities to adopt a kitty. We'll hear those details about the class and more when Carrie Head joins us in a bit later in the show. Right now, though, let's discuss therapy dogs and a particular therapy dog, Beacon, with his handler and human, Tracy Callahan Molnar, with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Tracy Callahan Molnar to Talking Animals on WM. Good morning, Tracy.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals.
Yeah, very glad to be here and be speaking with you.
Oh, great. Thanks. So, of course, we're mainly here to talk about therapy dogs and obviously one particular therapy dog by the name of Beacon. But you're every bit as much Beacon's companion as he is yours. Plus, you have a background in gymnastics and coaching gymnastics, not to mention you have direct experience with a therapy dog who preceded Beacon. So I think we really need to discuss your history and story a little bit first to set the scene for the broader discussion that brought us here today. So tell me a little bit about your gymnastics background.
I participated in artistic gymnastics, which is the gymnastics that most of us are familiar with, balance beam, uneven bars, vault, and floor exercise. From when I was a child through my sophomore year of college. And, you know, I was, by today's standards for sure, and probably even then, I was a pretty standard skilled gymnast, but I was passionate about the sport. And after my sophomore year of college, the college I was going to lost their recruiting funds. And so we lost our artistic gymnastics team, unfortunately. But my coach, Nora Campbell, had already had her hand in the sport of rhythmic gymnastics. She was helping on a national level, but without a job title behind that. It was just her own passion for the sport of rhythmic gymnastics. And so she started a collegiate rhythmic gymnastics team, which was and still is the only college ever in the U.S. to have had a rhythmic gymnastics team. And rhythmic gymnastics is the sport that you see that uses hand apparatus such as ribbons, balls, ropes, clubs, and hoops. Mm-hmm. And it's been a six sport since 1984 and is growing. The sport is so much stronger in the U.S. now than it was definitely then. And so I did that sport for 2 years. I wasn't great at it, but I was, I think, as passionate about rhythmic gymnastics as I was about artistic gymnastics. And I graduated with a degree in education, and I had already been teaching artistic gymnastics while I was going to college. And it just sort of poured into my starting a rhythmic gymnastics program where I was teaching. And I taught that sport for 36 years and coached a competitive rhythmic gymnastics team for 10.
Wow. That's some serious experience there.
It was just such a beautiful blend for me to have, having been a gymnast and always, I think, since I was a kid, wanting to be an educator, just to move into teaching a sport that I loved so much. So, with much pride and appreciation for having been able to teach for so long.
And it also sounds like kind of like that the sort of through line of that story, at least one of them, is that you absolutely loved gymnastics to the extent that when the artistic gymnastics program didn't kind of pan out there at school and the coach there started this rhythmic gymnastics thing, you thought, all right, well, that's not really what I've been doing, but I'm going to jump into that because it enables me to still be in gymnastics.
100%. I couldn't stand the thought of not participating in the sport. And like I said, I wasn't great at rhythmic gymnastics, but my coach embraced my abilities, and as she did everybody else on the team, and we were off and running for those 2 years. So, you know, so glad to have done that sport.
And just to back up for a sec, when the coach launched that program, and I think at one point you said, maybe I misunderstood, that it was the only rhythmic gymnastics program like that. Was that because other schools and universities and just even other more broadly programs had included other, you know, artistic gymnastics as well, so they didn't have just exclusively rhythmic gymnastics? Is that what kind of separated it?
Rhythmic gymnastics in the U.S. at that time was such a very young sport, and I don't think that many people knew what the sport was. In fact, we the U.S. and USA Gymnastics has spent such a long time really educating people about what the sport was. You know, it was historically a very strong sport in the Eastern European countries, and so when we competed in college in rhythmic gymnastics, we competed against private clubs, private gymnastics clubs that did have rhythmic programs. So, and we compete, you know, high ceilings are an important facet of a venue for rhythmic gymnastics because it involves high tosses of these hand apparatus. And so we I remember competing in shopping malls because they have endlessly high ceilings. And, it was really such a new sport to much of America. So I think, I don't think there are even like intramural rhythmic gymnastics programs at colleges. So it was really, it's too bad that it hasn't kind of continued in the collegiate level of sport. But again, just glad to have participated.
For sure. Why do you think it hasn't continued or taken hold kind of maybe the way you guys that were participating then hoped that it would?
You know, I don't. There was a push at some point to start introducing the sport in colleges, but it just was. I don't know. I wish I could provide the history about what the challenges were.
Yeah.
But I am happy to say that our, like, the national governing body of our sport, USA Gymnastics, the sport has grown much stronger with USA Gymnastics and across the country.
Do you think just Just curious, as you describe some of this, I'm just curious, was there any kind of slightly condescending attitude or anything within the broader gymnastics world about rhythmic gymnastics? Was that maybe one of the things that was keeping it from pushing forward or taking off on a broader level?
I think perhaps, you know, I would say definitely outside of the sport of gymnastics, I think across the general public, the sport of rhythmic gymnastics had a big proving ground trying to help people understand that, yes, it truly is a sport. And, you know, the with like many sports, the idea is to make it look easy, you know,
yeah.
To make it look fluid and seamless. And I think it took a lot to make people understand that the skill required to do rhythmic gymnastics is in some ways similar to artistic gymnastics and in many ways very different.
Yeah.
And, you know, strength is a component, flexibility, dance, precision, you know, to toss a ball in the air and do X number of skills underneath that toss and know that that ball is going to come down precisely where you need it, sometimes in the middle of another element, to continue on and stay with the music and make it look simple and flawless is no small feat. So
it took
time, but with our current the vice president of the rhythmic gymnastics program at USA Gymnastics, Caroline Hunt, and her predecessors, you know, the sport has really taken note in our country.
That's great. And it is interesting how a certain factor, like in one sport or even one, element of a sport, like as you describe how rhythmic gymnastics, you know, the people that are good at that, just like other sports, including other kinds of gymnastics, the idea is to look effortless, but how in that particular instance, that kind of worked against it getting the respect and maybe building a wider recognition than it merited.
Yeah. Yes. You know, I don't know if you remember the Goodwill Games. They used to happen I don't even remember. I want to say every 3 years or something, non-Olympic years. And it was Ted Turner. I think he was the brains and maybe the financing behind the Goodwill Games. And I remember at one Goodwill Games, the rhythmic gymnastics competition was in Spokane, Washington, and I was part of the event staff. And I remember the TV crew came in days before the competition to sort of, you know, make sure they had their cameras set where they needed to and to kind of understand the sport so that they knew how to film the sport. You know, sometimes like they would, at the beginning of the training, one of the gymnasts would toss a ribbon in the air and the camera would go up to the ribbon instead of following the gymnast underneath to show what they were doing. So it was just sort of an education for the cameraman.
Mm-hmm.
And we heard their snickering and their jokes about, you know, oh my gosh, I can't believe we're here filming this and it's a sport. And by the end of the competition, some of those same cameramen were coming up and apologizing to us, event staff. I don't know that they spoke specifically to any of the gymnasts, but they just grew very appreciative of how technical the sport was and
yeah.
How difficult it was. So, you know, again, it was all about getting the sport out there and helping educate the public about what the sport is.
Yeah. Boy, that's interesting, but that says a lot that just within the short period of that competition that those people that were snickering on day one were coming back a few days later and saying, boy, we really missed this and we apologize and it's quite impressive after all. So
right, we get we understand.
Yeah. So for folks that might just be tuning in, let me let them know this is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you did just tune in, my guest is Tracy Callahan Molnar, handler and main human of Beacon, the therapy dog who's become increasingly beloved across the USA gymnastics world and become a full-fledged media sensation along the way. If you have questions for Tracy about Beacon or therapy dogs generally or would like to offer a related comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. So one fundamental narrative this morning involves the kind of the intersection of gymnasts or gymnastics, I guess, really, and therapy dogs. We've addressed a bit of your history with gymnastics. Let's similarly explore your history with therapy dogs. If I'm not mistaken, Beacon isn't your first therapy dog. Tell me how you kind of first stepped into the therapy dog world.
Yes, that's right. Beacon is my second therapy dog. So our first dog, my late husband, David, and I had also a golden retriever, as Beacon is, named Tulsa. And, you know, Tulsa initially was our family pet. And, well, it was always our family pet. And probably when Tulsa was about 2 years old, I started to see, you know, I had a constant reminder about how much he liked people and meeting people and hanging out with them. And equally, I saw how people reacted to him. And there was a particular gentleman on one of our walk routes, an older gentleman, and I used to see him sometimes when we walked past their house. He would be standing in the window, and when he would see us, he would wave from the window, and I didn't know who he was, but I would wave back, and we would see him from time to time. And one day, as we walked past his house, I saw him, and his wave seemed a little bit more urgent, and so I thought maybe he needed help, and so he sort of motioned for us to wait, and so I waited, and he walked down the path, moving relatively slowly, and he said hello, and we started talking, and he started to pet Tulsa, and he just gently folded himself over Tulsa and just gently hugged him. And this man was probably in his early to mid 80s. And it just was a moment for me to see someone so I guess enamored or touched by Tulsa.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he said, I see you sometimes, do you come by the same time every day? Like, I think he just wanted, if he could have, you know, to see us every day and come out and say hi. And that kind of just made me realize that Tulsa might be as important to others as he was to my husband and I.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of fast forward some years, Beacon was about 6. And my husband was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer.
Oh, geez.
And went through, it's a brutal cancer. And he went through a major surgery. And part of his after treatment was chemotherapy. And I went with him for his chemotherapy treatments. And at the hospital where he was receiving those treatments, they had therapy animals, therapy dogs. And so we had built-in pet therapy at home. But how wonderful for David and for other patients to have this therapeutic modality, if we can call it that, just to help ease the stress and help pass the time. And David and I looked at each other, you know, at these moments when the therapy dogs were there, and our discussion that followed that was, wow, Tulsa has to do this. Tulsa was cut out for this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't move on that immediately because my energies were directed towards David and what his immediate needs were at that point.
Of course.
And I lost my husband in 2013. And
so sorry.
It was my, thank you, thanks. My decision to pursue pet therapy with Tulsa was really to both honor David and celebrate him. And I knew that, you know, what we had both known about Tulsa and his gift, and not knowing everything that would be involved in having a therapy dog or getting a dog ready for pet therapy. But just, you know, it was really to honor Tulsa as well and what he had to offer and what he enjoyed doing. So, you know, I just did the research, and we went through some testing situations, and we then did some additional training in the areas where Tulsa was a bit weak. And then we actually onboarded at that same hospital where David had received his chemotherapy treatment. And we did pet therapy there for about a year before I moved from Illinois to California.
Mm. And within that first year, like once Tulsa had completed the training and the preparations to qualify as a therapy dog, and you started working as a team in that regard at the same hospital, what did you like about making those visits? What really got to you in some sounds like powerful way.
Yeah, you know, it's emotional even to think about it because, for example, and every hospital that has a program has different protocol, and you know, and every pet therapy organization has some overlapping rules, but also some different rules. At the hospital where we were, Tulsa, and I first began, me along with other pet therapy teams would meet up in the pet therapy office, and we would just split up, like, okay, I'll take cardiac rehab, I'll take the cancer center, I'll take pediatrics. And so on my first day, I didn't know how all that worked, and all of the veteran pet therapy teams had already chosen their areas to go, and the one area still remaining was the cancer center.
Wow.
And I thought, oh man, like, how can I do this? Am I going to be able to keep it together for the sake of the patient after what I'd been through, you know, with my husband and his cancer and
for sure,
and all of that? And I just thought, yes, of course I can. Of course I can do it. I know what those therapy dogs did for not only David, but for me when we were there together. So I did it. And to see those, this is where I get emotional about it, to see those patients, and I'll say then and continuing since then to the present. Beacon and I were just volunteering yesterday at Huntington Health Hospital in Pasadena, California, where we live, to be able to have a front row seat to seeing stress melt away and seeing, you know, smiles created. It's an honor. It really is an honor and a true privilege to be able to do that. And that's what happened that day with the cancer patients that we visited. And I knew that it was not only something that Tulsa was cut out to do, but that I was as well. And it was, we made it a good team, as I think Beacon and I do.
Boy, that's the very definition of toughing it out, though, when kind of all the assignments were complete and all that was left for you was the cancer ward. And it's like, oh my goodness, you know, can I really do this? And you just seem to forge ahead. And I guess taking strength from some of the experiences and from Tulsa himself. And it sounds like really this was kind of foreshadowed in a way from your walks with that neighbor that really took a shine to Tulsa.
Yeah, I think that's well put. I agree with you. And it was just about, you know, paying attention to it and then doing something about it. So, and like I said, you know, it was, Tulsa was about two when I first started to see, you know, see what, that he had these gifts and these interests to be with people and the right demeanor. But I didn't do anything about it until he was six. So, you know, so grateful that I did and that I paid attention. And you know, if there's a silver lining to what David went through, you know, that could be it right there.
Yeah. So let's skip a little bit ahead in the timeline and talk a little bit more about Beacon, who, of course, is, as I've noted, become kind of a media darling and obviously really made a huge difference in the USA Gymnastics world. So what was the initial circumstance leading to Beacon's kind of first visit with gymnasts?
You mean in terms of becoming a therapy dog?
Well, yeah, I assume that this was before he was an official therapy dog. I assume his probably first encounter or with gymnasts or in the USA Gymnastics world was probably as a therapy dog. But maybe there was something more informal initially.
So Beacon, you know, when I got Beacon, I just hoped, because I loved doing the pet therapy with Tulsa, I hoped that he would want to do it and that he would have maybe not exactly the same gifts as Tulsa, but similar gifts in terms of, you know, being trainable, you know, liking people, being gentle with them, all of that. And probably from, you know, the day I brought him home or the day after I brought him home, you know, I my personal feeling is that I'm sure that there is specialized therapy dog training out there. But for me with Tulsa and with Beacon, I just did obedience training with them and then layered with the right temperament. You know, a very well-trained dog that doesn't have the right temperament or isn't really a fan of hanging out with people maybe doesn't make the best therapy dog. But Beacon comes by the love of people naturally. Like, his temperament is his own. I didn't train that. That's all his. And then I did the obedience training with him. So, and we, our testing or our evaluation that we went through was through Pet Partners, which is one of the national pet therapy organizations, among several. And the hospital where I volunteered here when I moved to California with Tulsa was the same hospital that I wanted to stay with, or stay at with Beacon. So we did our evaluations there. And, you know, Beacon didn't, we passed our evaluation, but we did not start visiting patients immediately because Beacon used to be quite a puller. And we knew that even though we did pass our evaluation together, we knew that as much as a patient might want to see a therapy dog while they were in the hospital, that Beacon could not, you know, pull me into the hospital room to do that. So
yeah.
For about 4 months, we visited the hospital staff away from the patient population until Beacon got the lay of the land and really understood the expectations. And so we, you know, greeted staff and we as a team earned our right to start visiting patients. And now 2 years later, you know, we are visiting, we visit outpatient rehab, the emergency room, pediatrics, surgical waiting, critical care, and then patient rooms, you know, those patients who request pet therapy. So we've really put in the work and, you know, sort of earned that chance to do that.
And what would you say now with your experience first before Beacon with Tulsa and then with Beacon? Because obviously all dogs are somewhat different, if not considerably different.
Sure.
But what would you say are the traits that really are essential to be an effective therapy dog? Because as you noted, some may or may not be or might have some qualities that sort of essentially disqualify them from the work, even if they otherwise have a great disposition or other virtues. So what are the things that are essential to really have for a dog to be an effective therapy dog?
Well, you know, obedience, I think, is paramount. You know, when they're evaluated, for example, with Pet Partners, part of the testing involves maybe volunteers that are acting as ornery or angry patients, like yelling and raised voices over in the corner of the room. They're looking at, I'll use Beacon as an example. They're watching, the evaluator is watching Beacon. How is he reacting to that? Is he fearful? Is he aggressive? Is he calm? And then those same individuals, still with raised voices and perhaps some awkward movement, move towards Beacon and ask to pet him. So again, they're watching, how is Beacon handling that? Is he remaining calm? And not only how is Beacon handling that, but how am I handling that?
Mm-hmm.
I am Beacon's advocate. Am I, you know, reminding these patients that, yes, they're welcome to pet him, but this is how we pet him, not heavy-handedly, you know, that if they're not following sort of my directions about the best way to greet Beacon and to pet him and spend time with him, then it's my job then to remove him from that setting. And gratefully, I've never had to do that. But sometimes I've had to give gentle reminders about, you know, just soft petting or, you know, keeping a little bit of space, you know, not having a lot of people be kind of constraining to the dog, that kind of thing, or not tight squeezes on hugs. So that's part of the evaluation. Also, they want to see how the dogs react to things like wheelchairs, crutches. Some dogs are very skittish around things with wheels or things that make noises. So they're looking at reactions about that. Part of the testing with Pet Partners is they drop an object behind the dog that will make some sort of noise when it hits the ground. Again, they're looking for the reaction, aggressive, fearful. They, I think, expect a reaction, but they're looking at how quickly they recover.
Yeah.
So those are some important components, and they bring in what they call a neutral dog, which is usually a very calm dog, and we have to be able to walk past that neutral dog with zero interaction. They cannot like my dog couldn't cross in front of me to go sniff or say hello to that dog. We just have to keep going as though that dog wasn't there. He has to be able to walk past a dog toy on the ground. Some programs you have to be able, if there's a food on the ground and the dog has to be able to walk past that without lunging or grabbing at that. So, you know, I think they're to kind of produce situations that the dog might encounter in different therapeutic settings.
But there's certainly quite a bit of variables, and they're really testing those dogs in all kinds of ways before they're cleared, I guess, for duty, as it were.
Yes, because it's, you know, we all think, wow, warm and fuzzy. It's a great thing to be able to have therapy dogs in a hospital setting, and not just a hospital setting. We now know there are therapy dogs in school settings or assisted living facilities,
airports, et cetera. Yeah,
I have reading programs for kids where the kids can just be sitting on the ground reading while they're petting the dogs. In a non-judgmental, dogs are not judgmental. So what a great environment for kids to be able to do that. So the, but when you're putting an animal, whether it's a therapy cat or a therapy horse or a therapy alpaca, whatever it is, you have to make sure that it's a safe environment for the people that are receiving the pet therapy and for the animals themselves.
Yeah. Let me let folks know again, this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Tracy Callahan, Molnar Handler and Main Human, a beacon, the much-beloved therapy dog who became a media sensation at the recent USA Gymnastics Trials for the Olympics. We invite you to join the conversation with any thoughts about therapy dogs or questions you might have by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at WNF.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So, I don't want to run out of time before we acknowledge that Beacon was clearly the bell of the ball in Minneapolis. He elicited all kinds of coverage in the New York Times and a range of other media outlets. The gymnasts couldn't get enough of him. It also looked like there was probably some very long days at those trials. So I guess I'm interested to know, what kind of toll does that take on Beacon to have what at least appear to be very long days? I mean, how does he cope with that, or how do you kind of help mitigate whatever wear and tear there might be on him doing all that great work?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I'm glad that comes up, because they were long days start to finish, but my job, part of the things that we talked about in terms of my advocating for my dog, my therapy dog, is to give him downtime, and that we did. So, segments of time that were a maximum of 2 hours when we were providing pet therapy for the gymnasts, for the coaches, for judges. And then it was either going back to the hotel with Beacon and just letting him sleep. Or rest, or maybe a light walk and then rest after that, or maybe at the competition venue, just to find a quiet room for him to have that downtime. My experience with Tulsa and with Beacon, and in conversations with the many other therapy teams that have been a little bit behind the scenes at these events, but certainly to give them credit, because Beacon and I travel to gymnastic events, but in each city that we've been in, I also organize local pet therapy teams to come and be an assist. So we might have 4 pet therapy teams in our wellness room for the athletes and coaches to come in and spend time with the dogs, not just Beacon. So that downtime is critical, because therapy dogs, as I started to say before, quite often absorb the stress of the people they're relieving the stress of.
Yeah.
So that, I used to think when Tulsa and I first started, like, oh, okay, after we were at the hospital volunteering, then we'll go to the dog park, and then we'll do, well, no. Tulsa wanted to go home and take a nap.
Yeah, I'm sure.
As many therapy dogs are. So though, from start to finish, it might be a long day, but Beacon definitely has downtime. And I really do want people to understand that, because I love what Beacon is doing, and I love what we have the chance to do together. But at the end of the day, he's a dog, and he's my dog, and his happiness is paramount to me.
For sure. And I'm sure you can read him very well at this point and can determine, hey, it's time that we go back to the hotel, or it's time that we just chill out for a bit, or maybe even go for a little bit of a light walk or whatever is called for.
Right. I've learned his cues. I've learned when he's starting to tire and start to check out, and then we're done.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to get him so tired or emotionally spent that he needs his own therapy dog. Then we're getting into a complicated world. But
That's right.
Let's talk a little bit about how pivotal somebody like Beacon, and I know there were other dogs there, but Beacon, again, was kind of really singled out for all kinds of reasons at the trials there at Minneapolis. And USA Gymnastics, I mean, some people listening, I'm sure, know this well, and some may not, has really had a profound need, it looks like, over the years for things that would bring comfort to the gymnasts and bring some soothing elements to their competition days, their trial days, et cetera. Can you briefly outline what the condition of USA Gymnastics was as a culture, and consequently why Beacon and other therapy dogs were so welcome, maybe even necessary in a competitive setting like the recent trials in Minneapolis?
So if I understand your question, it's sort of a compare and contrast before pet therapy with USA Gymnastics as opposed to the present?
Yeah, a little bit. Also, as part of that, just some context for some of the struggles that USA Gymnastics has gone through with some tough times for some gymnasts and some very harsh and maybe even abusive coaches, and just a number of things that I think made it particularly emotionally difficult for, because sometimes it seems like maybe proportionate to other sports, some of the athletes that are kind of the highest level are also some of the very youngest, and sometimes that makes for inherently kind of vulnerable.
Yes, I think one of the big changes, as I see it, in USA Gymnastics is a positive change is transparency. And not only transparency within the national governing body of the sport, USA Gymnastics, but with in gyms and with coaches and education of coaches and, you know, not just coaching someone how to teach a skill, but how to, you know, the importance of mental health for these athletes, for these gymnasts, because, you know, they're gymnasts for X number of years of their life. And for the rest of their life, they're human beings. And I mean, they're so let's take care of these individuals from start to finish. And I really not only applaud USA Gymnastics for, I mean, look, they did go through a lot, and they have recognized, you know, it's been very public about the struggles, but I really admire and acknowledge what they're doing to dig out from that, really.
Yeah.
And pet therapy is one of those, and you know, one of those, the ways that they're doing that and really supporting. And I, you know, I speak often about the gymnasts, but the coaches as well, you know, to support. How can we help these gymnasts attain their goals? How can we strengthen the sport in our country? And pet therapy, I mean, that's really the area where I can speak the most strongly about, because that's what I'm involved in with USA Gymnastics.
But it does really look like USA Gymnastics, I guess, maybe from a leadership standpoint and then from there down, has really kind of revamped all kinds of things and brought in additional programs, and pet therapy will be one of those many things and other initiatives to make it safer, less quote-unquote toxic, and just more calming, comforting thing where there's a high-pressure, high-stress environment. Just inherently.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
Well, that's great. Well, we have just about reached the end of our time, but any last thing we should know about Beacon before we go, just because, again, other than he's, you know, of course, irresistible and has a cute face and obviously really struck a chord with all kinds of gymnasts and others and journalists and many others. Anything else we should know? Any kind of inside tidbit?
Oh, boy. You know, he just, other than knowing, I hope people know that he just loves people. He loves people. Does not like to see people walk past him without stopping to say hi. But he's goofy also. You know, he's living in Southern California, we have a lot of palm trees. He loves grabbing a palm frond off the ground and running down the sidewalk with it in his mouth. He loves finding baseballs in people's yards. He sniffs out the leather and, you know, is all about that. He loves to swim. He loves to hike. He's a very active dog, loves stuffed animals.
And doesn't he like, this pops into my head, doesn't he like to be cool? And there's some kind of thing that he has where he likes the part of the refrigerator for like a little cool down period now and again?
Well, yes. He climbs into my refrigerator. There you have it.
Okay.
He's been doing it since he was a puppy, and I thought he would lose interest in a week or two, and he's 4 years old, and he climbs into my fridge. So it isn't about the food in the fridge. He just hates hot weather, and
yeah.
So come in from our walks, he gets fridge time. The fridge door is never closed. He gets 3 minutes, and then I boot him out, and it's not, you know, he enjoys it. It's not hurting anything. It's crazy. I never thought I'd be a person who would let my dog climb in the fridge, but I do, and he does.
Yeah.
So.
Well, with all these heat waves everywhere, maybe more people will be like Beacon and get a little time in the refrigerator just to cool down.
Yeah.
So he may be starting a trend of some kind. But
safe. You want to keep it safe, for sure.
Well, absolutely. Well, this has been great. We've been speaking with Tracy Callahan Molnar. We've been talking chiefly about her therapy dog Beacon, and again, look for Beacon on Instagram. There's all kinds of great posts, great photos, and other stuff there. You can find out more about Beacon there. So Tracy, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. I really appreciate it.
Very good. Thank you, Duncan. Nice to speak with you.
Likewise. Thanks again. In a moment, I'll speak with Carrie Head about Petpal Animal Shelter's cat yoga class, I should say, I guess, coming up at the St. Pete Shelter this next Tuesday, July 16th at 6 p.m. You'll be joined by some of the shelter's cats, even as you do down dog, which seems contradictory, perhaps. And you might wind up adopting one of the cats. More about this cat yoga class in just a moment here on Talking Animals on WMF. Right now, though, we're going to step into the comedy corner with a piece from Eddie Pepitone with a slight twist on our discussion of Beacon and other therapy dogs. This is a piece called Dog Therapy from Eddie Pepitone in today's comedy corner on Talking Animals on WMF.
But I've turned my dog into my shrink. I'm talking to her now as if she was my shrink because I'm bored to tears with my real shrink. You know what I mean? We understand each other. I'm there to fill an hour. She gets some insurance money, whatever it is. But now I talk to my dog like she's my shrink. I'm saying to her like, Charlotte, you don't think I have diabetes, do you? Blood work all the time. Those centrifuges they use, a lot of them are suspect. And Charlotte, you don't think the cops saw me sideswipe that car in the shopping, supermarket, parking lot? I mean, the police would be here already, right? Charlotte, it's not too bad that I threaten people anonymously online, is it? Charlotte, I have enough money in my bank account, right?
By the way, if Charlotte knew how much money I have in my bank account, instead of running and chasing balls, she'd just be in the apartment smoking cigarettes. She'd just be like going, great, I thought I landed on my feet here.
That was Eddie Pepitone in today's Comedy Corner with a piece called Dog Therapy, taken from his album In Ruins. Now it's time to speak with Carrie Head of Petpal Animal Shelter about their upcoming cat yoga class. Here's Carrie Head on Talking Animals on WMF. Good morning, Carrie.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals.
Of course.
So for those listening who may not be familiar with Petpal Animal Shelter, can you just give us maybe a brief overview, just some basic details, history, and the mission of the shelter?
Of course. We're located in St. Petersburg, and we've been around for almost 20 years now. Our primary mission is to take in animals from high-kill shelters, the ones that are going to be euthanized for time, for space, or health reasons. We bring them into our shelter, rehabilitate them, and find them home.
Well, that sounds great. So let's get into the matter at hand today, cat yoga. So how does it work exactly?
Well, we have space in our lobby for a yoga class. So once the shelter is closed, we set up for class. We open the door to our community cat room and let the cats kind of wander around the lobby and get comfortable. And once class starts, they just kind of wander around and cuddle with people or just watch. So the people get their feline fix and the cats get a lot of socialization.
So how many cats might be wandering around in a cat yoga class?
Oh, that's hard to tell. It kind of depends. I know this week we have a transport coming in from another shelter and we have probably 8 to 10 cats in that transport. So assuming that everybody's healthy and well, we should have about that number for yoga next week.
Wow, that's great. And how many humans typically participate in a class like this?
In the past, probably about a dozen. We have room for up to 18. So, you know, anywhere from 12 to 18.
That's great. Sounds like a good human to cat ratio, too. I like that.
Oh, it's a lot of fun, for sure. Some of them are a little shy and might hide. A lot of them might just climb right over you while you're doing your downward dog.
Well, that's awesome. And then what's the possibility or likelihood of one or more of those cats being adopted by the end of the class or afterwards?
Being adopted?
Yeah.
Sometimes that happens. It does provide a little opportunity for the yoga attendees to meet our cats and spend some time with them. And every once in a while, somebody will fall in love. And we always hope for that, for sure.
So sometimes that's a byproduct, but that's not necessarily the intent. The intent is just to do a yoga class where cats are kind of wandering around in and out of your various poses.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's good for the people. It's good for the cats. So it's a win-win.
That's great. All right, well, let's go over the details here. So again, this is next Tuesday, July 16th, 6 yes. to 7 p.m., I believe, at Pet Pal Animal Shelter
yes.
itself, right? Which is 405 22nd Street South, right?
Correct.
In St. Pete?
Correct, yes.
And so how would someone, if they're interested and say, hey, I want to get in on this, how would they register or follow up?
There is a link on our website, on the homepage of our website for cat yoga. You can purchase tickets there, or if you go to we have a Facebook event on our Facebook page. There's also a link to purchase tickets there. If either one of those gives you trouble, you're always welcome to call the shelter, and we will get you set up.
Okay, cool. And the website is what for Pet Pal Animal Shelter?
PetPalAnimalShelter.com.
Well, that couldn't be any simpler, could it? That's great.
Right.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, this sounds like it's going to be fun, and hopefully you'll get some good cat action and yoga action and maybe even get an adoption or two out of it as an added bonus that we can only hope. So,
I sure hope so, and thank you so much for having us on and putting the word out. We appreciate it.
For sure.
It.
Thanks for joining us today on Talk Animals. Good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Coming up on WNF, it's The Conversation, the new show hosted by Mario Nunez and Joe King Carter. After that, we shift back to music program with Jim Bannon from 1 to 3, followed by Nancy C, hosting the Wednesday Traffic Jam from 3 to 6 p.m., at which point our terrific Wednesday night block of Latin music kicks in. We have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WNF Tampa. Next Wednesday, July 17th, I'll be joined by journalist and author Joshua Hammer, who wrote an extraordinary piece in the current issue of Smithsonian Magazine. It's called Pablo Escobar's Abandoned Hippos Are Wreaking Havoc in the Colombian Jungle. And it's I could not recommend this more highly. It's journalism at its finest. So we're going to talk with him all about that and what it was like researching and reporting a thing where there's tons of dangerous hippos in the wake of this whole Pablo Escobar hippo zoo and collection that he had. So that's next Wednesday here on Talking Animals on WNF. I invite you to join me for that. I also invite you to visit TalkingAnimals.net for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. Apple Podcasts are available there too, as well as other podcast platforms. Also links to our social media pages, etc. And you can also subscribe to our newsletter to find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand and other news from the Talking Animals world. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is Talking Animals on WNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachi, and beyond. Stay tuned for the conversation after NPR News headlines, and then back to music after that from 1 o'clock onward here on WNF Tampa. Thanks so much. See you next Wednesday on Talking Animals. Thanks.